We asked Ron Van Dam how he thinks audience members should be treated.
Put them in a cage so we can gawk at them.
You know, sir, I like the way you think. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Make yourself comfortable. No, not that comfortable. Hey, what are you doing here? Do you know how I know that I'm a better person? When I go to a hotel, I don't take the towels anymore. I used to, but I don't anymore. I've grown up. I got my own towels. What I do take are the shampoos and the lotions. Oh, yeah, come on, seriously. All right, fine, whatever. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. I can prove it. See? Okay. Well, a lot of stuff going on in the world, and I choose not to talk about it right now. You can get that from the news all the time. It's amazing to me how many people I talk to, and they say, hey, Ron, what's going on with that coronavirus thing? Are you serious? Are you freaking serious? On the verge of a pandemic, which is actually happening in Europe right now and in the Far East, you don't know what's going on? You don't know the ramifications or how this is headed or anything like that? Shame on you, you feckless little person. Do something about that, man. This is like your family and your life and everything and your health and your way of life and the stock market and quarantines and shutting people off from things and not being able to get supplies and going to a doctor's office with a bunch of sick people there. I mean, people over the age of 60 who have medical conditions, which is, by the way, that's you. But Ron, I'm not 60. You have medical conditions, and you know you do. You tell me you have them. Now you don't, you do. Anyway, what the hell am I talking about? So I don't want to talk about it. It is what it is. It goes where it goes. All I can tell you is stay informed. It's for your own sake, okay? I mean, things aren't horrible, but they ain't good either. Economy is tanking as a result. You may want to find out about that. And that's affecting you and perhaps your job in the near future. You may want to find out about that too. Or maybe not. Just keep on top of it. It's all I'm saying to you. Okay, thank you. Now, in order to get as far away from that subject as possible for just a short period of time, my guest today is fascinating to me. Hello, welcome to the show. Oh, not that far back. Let me start again. I believe in possibilities. Everything's possible. Some things hardly possible, but always a percentage of possibility exists. Are we the only planet in infinity to have life on it like this? I don't think so. That would be like kind of impossible, wouldn't it? So is there life on another planet in some other galaxy, some other thing, universe, whatever you want to call these things? Probably. Do they have the ability to travel here? I don't know. Possibly. So we get into the area of UFOs and visits from other planets and alien abduction. Alien abduction is not some guy from Mexico coming into El Paso. That's not what alien abduction is, Donald Trump. We're talking about something from another planet abducting humans from basically from trailer parks. We're going to abduct them from the muffler of this trailer here. Let's get some trailer parts, shall we? And then go back to our planet. Very similar to tornadoes, apparently the alien abductions take place in Tornado Alley, in trailer parks. I don't know why. Anyway, is it possible? Well, we hear stories about it. We usually find them entertaining. This particular author, Ron Felber, tells us some stories of actual alien abduction. Is that possible? Again, anything really is. I mean, I believe that there are possibly spirits, ghosts. I don't know if you want to call them that. Spirits? Possibly. How the hell am I supposed to know? So as long as I definitively can't say, no, that is not even remotely possible, then it's possible. So let's keep an open mind today as we speak to our guest coming up rather shortly. As a matter of fact, I'm going to devote most of the show to him because I don't want to talk about this virus thing. It's getting ridiculous. Not that the virus is ridiculous, but talking about it incessantly is. Anyway, so going back to, I'm all over the place today. Oh, what's wrong with me? You know, I haven't had coffee yet. Oh, the excuse of the century. I haven't had coffee yet. You can screw up as much as you want all day or at work. Bob, what's the matter with you? You're making tons of mistakes. What's going on? I haven't had my coffee yet. Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't have your coffee yet. Well, okay. That excuses everything. It's amazing, huh? I haven't had my coffee yet. Oh, okay, Donald Trump. I didn't know. I thought you were just an asshole, but apparently you just haven't had your coffee yet. Do you ever drink coffee? What a great excuse. I went into Boston over the weekend, and I was passing this coffee house, and I don't remember the name. It was some guy's name, and it was just, and I didn't know if it was a boutique or what. It was just a guy's name on this big pane of glass, but inside there were people drinking coffee. Tons of people just sitting around with a coffee cup, nothing else, just coffee. And I peered through the window, and I wondered, what the hell's going on in here? It was like some kind of zoo. You know, I'm gawking in the window at these people just sitting there drinking coffee. They seem so complacent. I felt like walking into the coffee shop saying, all right, none of you have made mistakes this morning. Well, we can't say we made a mistake because we're having our coffee, so I guess that's not an excuse. Yeah, that's right. They all looked like the same person. Everybody drinking coffee looked exactly the same. They were dressed the same. They looked the same. They moved the same. They drank their coffee the same. They spoke the same. They leaned over the same. Everybody in a coffee shop looks exactly the same. Bored. They just sit there sipping coffee. They look bored. Some of them have conversation. Boring conversation. Now, you take that and you put it into a cocktail lounge or a bar, and your people are very different. There's nothing boring about that. Coffee shop? Oh, boring. I've never in my life, in my entire waking days, I never sat in a coffee shop just to sit in a coffee shop and sip coffee. Never did it. Never will. There's no point. If I get coffee from a coffee shop, I'm going to get my coffee and I'm going to get the hell out of the coffee shop. There's no reason to stay. Unless you want other people to look at you. Maybe people who just sit and sip coffee at tables and coffee shops, maybe they're just like wanting to belong to other people who sip coffee in coffee shops. It's very, very weird. It's just odd to look at. I mean, and when I say coffee shop, I'm talking like a Starbucks kind of place or whatever I was talking about this place. But they don't sell anything else. It's just coffee. It's just coffee. It's not a luncheonette or anything. It's not a diner. It's just coffee. It's all there is. And they just sit there and they sip it. The only difference is some of them don't even take their coats off and some do. Other than that, What's on underneath the coats? Exactly the same. They shop at the same place. They do everything the same way. Boring, boring, boring. I would never want to be caught sitting in a coffee shop just sipping coffee. It begs the question, don't you have anything else to do? Well, this is how I relax. You relax by drinking caffeine? You don't understand how much that doesn't make sense. I can't do anything without my coffee. Well, that says a lot about you, doesn't it, huh? Totally incapable without taking a few sips of coffee first. Congratulations. You're not functional. All right. My guest is here, sitting on the other side of this wall here, and I don't want to put him off too much longer. So if you'll just excuse me, you'll be right with us.
Who is the stone cold, soulful, righteous groove master here to make everything smooth and cool? It's Ron Van Dam. Oh, yeah. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Ron Felber joins us now. Interesting man. He's written a series of books, and the latest one is called The Mojave Incident, which is fascinating, by the way. It's kind of right up my alley because I find fascination in this particular subject matter. But first, Ron, what part of the country do you reside in?
Actually, I'm in New Jersey. I live in Mendham, New Jersey, which is not so far from Newark Airport, near Morristown.
I was brought up in Teaneck, New Jersey. You know where that is?
I do, of course. Yeah. It's a much better state than it's given credit for.
It is. You have to live there to understand it. And also you have to have a lot of money to live there.
Yes, and well, so is Boston.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, Boston is kind of more expensive, but New Jersey, property tax-wise, off the map. Anyway, let's that's your next book, right?
Yeah, really.
Okay. You wrote about the mafia and human trafficking in your book, The Kafka Society. And here you've kind of done an interesting twist, and I don't know how the two are related to an author, but here you've focused on the experience of a couple that went through an incredible experience that one might consider to be supernatural. What draws you to these certain subject matters?
You know, as you mentioned earlier that this topic was of interest to you, you know, the paranormal and things mm-hmm. like that are of great interest to me as well. And I'm a guy that grew up with Rod Serling and the Twilight Zone and the rest and Ray Bradbury and so many great science fiction writers. And it's not a genre I really work much with. I do, you know, crime thrillers like the Jack Madsen series and I did The Mob Doctor, the TV show, because that was of interest to me. So this was really, you know, a bit of a departure, but I found the subject matter and the material so compelling, I couldn't resist.
Interesting. I mean, I'm not a very religious person. I don't know if it's proper for me to say that on the air, but I'm not very religious. My religion is the possibility of things beyond our existence, which I guess is what religion really is. And I think that's why I find fascination in things that are bigger than we are, bigger than we can conceive of, which is like religion in a sense.
Yeah, no, I think this book is what makes it, I think, the story so compelling to me and to readers is that it's sort of subject to interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first cut at this that Tom and Elise Gifford, the two protagonists, the two main people involved, had was that it was a UFO experience, and certainly there were craft and there were, you know, beings that they described with great, great detail in a sustained 8-hour experience that was conscious together. Mm-hmm. So that's very unusual. And then 4 hours of recovered time through a retrogressive hypnotist.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, there's another interpretation as well, because there are some clear good and evil religious kind of overtones to all of this. So you can come at it from the way you like, and you decide, you know, what does this account mean? What does it stand for?
Right. Now, as a setup, this is about a couple that go out into the desert, and they are confronted by, they have an alien encounter, actually. And it's an experience that we've heard about in the past through other writings and television shows and such. But this carries it about where that it doesn't stop at that point. This is something that continues for them. So it's kind of suspenseful in that way. Did you actually sit down with them?
Oh yeah. This was really a lengthy period of research and taped recordings, and we brought them to Dr. Bernie Vitone, who is the director of the National Center of Psychiatry in Georgetown, Washington, D.C., where they were, you know, analyzed and tested for neurosis or psychosis or mental disorders, which they had none of. Yeah. Very normal people, except that they had suffered some tail end, telltale signs of that a POW might have,
right,
from the trauma. Also, I took them to Asheville, North Carolina, where Dr. William Annixter, who works with the FBI, as a retrogressive hypnotist and psychiatrist and medical doctor, retrogressed them back to the section of time, about 4 hours, that needed to be recovered. So this was really quite an extensive period of research and a lot of detail.
I assume that as an investigative writer at this juncture, that you had your doubts about perhaps a hoax at some points along the line, but I assume that they were disfused at a certain point?
Yeah, actually, I was working as a CEO of a chemical company, industrial chemical company, at the time when I first had an employee, a good friend of mine, who was a football player in California for one of the universities there. And he knew I was a writer, and he knew I was always looking for stories. And he told me about the Giffords. He had played football, and this fellow was an all-state football player. Mm-hmm. So very stable, et cetera, had two children at this point, a third on the way. I had no great interest in the story because I told him this isn't the kind of thing I do. And they had no interest in telling their story because they'd really kept it to themselves, almost as a matter of shame. You know, people in steady jobs and children and mortgages and whatnot, you don't really feel like going to your bosses and say, "Oh, by the way, I was abducted by aliens."
Right.
So there's no real motivation to do that.
Well, you kind
except
of, yeah.
that they needed to vent, so to tell people about it. And these medical doctors and psychiatrists were very helpful.
Hmm. What kinds of things, for those that are interested in getting into this, they had an incident, there was an encounter, and then most people think that that's where the story would stop, and we would, you know, check to see that they're telling the truth and all that kind of stuff, but it goes on for them. Are they visited again by this?
Well, actually, one of the things that I really think differentiates this story, it was called by Amazon Book Review, the most frightening UFO book ever written.
Mm.
And one of the reasons for that is because this is a sustained event with two people. I mean, usually you'll hear about a person, and it'll be at night, and, you know, they'll talk about their feelings, and that's all legitimate, et cetera. But when you have two people fully conscious, you know, stable, middle-class types pinching themselves, trapped in the back of their camper with a giant UFO hovering above them the size of a football field, with a smaller craft combing the desert basin in this deserted area of the Mojave, and again, pinching themselves. Do you see these beings that are surrounding us? They're basically held captive and tortured psychologically for this 8-hour period.
Yeah.
They wake up the next morning with the campfire burnt out outside of their camper, not knowing how they got there. They thought the world had ended.
Yeah,
they thought the Russians had invaded and dropped an atom bomb or something.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wasn't there a story like a decade or two previous where a couple had made a claim I think they were an interracial couple, as I recall. They had made a claim.
Betty and Barney Hill.
There you go.
From your neck of the woods, I think.
Yes, down the street. and that was found to be, I believe the upshot of that was not real.
No, that's not my not my understanding.
Oh.
I think that Betty and Barney Hill, again, you know, it's not like people are making money on this or that they become famous because of this. I mean, again, mm-hmm. these are people with jobs and careers, et cetera, you know, and goals and ambitions. They don't want their lives sidetracked by this kind of thing.
Oh, yes,
Betty and Barney Hill, my understanding is that they were retrogressed. And they had missing time. So basically, right. The experiences they had were recovered through hypnosis. This isn't like that. You know, this eight-hour experience was very conscious, again, moment to moment. And then they did have a period of missing time where they were actually taken onto the craft. And there's some stunning dialogue from the transcript between the hypnotherapist and the couple, each done separately, by the way, to rule out drugs or those kinds of things.
Sure. Because many people think that people do this for notoriety. Sure, if you have a job and you appear to be off your rocker, they'll probably let you go, so it's to your detriment to discuss this with anybody. But then there are some people that are looking for that 5 minutes of fame, which has been quite popular these days. Did that ever enter into it?
Not for me, because you know, these were fairly religious people. One woman was a Mormon, and the husband maybe a little as we discussed, so, you know, somebody that maybe, you know, believes in a higher being and likes the idea of spirituality, etc. But very stable, very directed, and really didn't want to talk about this. So they had to be sort of convinced, first by our mutual friend. And then by me, that this would be handled, you know, with integrity and done well.
Was there any type of physical evidence that resulted from the incident?
Well, there were some burn marks that Elise Gifford had, like three fingers on the side of her face, that there were photographs of and that were seen by others. Also, during the hypnotic session, she was pregnant. So, you know, we're kind of cautious with lie detector tests, which they were given, you know, because of the fetus and whatnot. But she also, during the course of the retrogressive hypnotic session, kept scratching at the side of her neck.
Yeah.
And so finally the doctor said, what's that? Why are you doing that? And she goes, probes. They put a probe inside my neck.
Wow.
So there were really some stunning moments, and I guess the physical evidence, more than anything, would be the sort of the symptoms that followed.
Right.
Again, a POW kind of symptoms with insomnia, sexual dysfunction, just rattled to the core. Yeah.
Where are these people today?
These days, they live in Utah. They became members. The woman was a member of the Mormon Church. The husband then converted. And these days, I think, I don't know that they're active within the church to sort of the degree that they were, but I think this whole experience sent them flying into the bosom of, you know, some comfort, which was the church.
Do you keep in touch with them every once in a while?
Actually, I just got a lengthy letter. Just yesterday. So, not for a while, but more recently, yes.
Yeah.
Hey, Ron, could I read something to you real quick?
Please.
I got to tell you, this is something that sets things apart a bit, because everybody says, why are these people abducted? What is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So during the retrogressive session, the doctor asked, Elise, do you have any idea what these beings want or why they're here?
Yes.
So I write, it was macabre watching as Elise sprang up in her chair, suddenly animated and alert. They want to make contact with the population. Steve and I are specimens. Tom and I are specimens, imperfect like the human race.
Uh-huh.
When we're ready to communicate with them face to face, then the world will be too. They have to study our reactions so they know how to approach us. They don't have emotions like ours, so need us to teach them. They need to understand humans. Do you have a sense as to who they are and where they come from? The doctor asked. There are five galaxies. Theirs is the next closest. In order for all five galaxies to work together, they have to start, and they're starting with us, so we'll be united galaxies. What else do you know? Dr. Amixter asked. I know where the universe ends, she said, rattling the words off in staccato fashion. Is that something you can put into words? Our universe ends where theirs begins. Our universe ends when all its matter stops mattering to us and starts mattering to them. Everyone in the room looked to one another, stunned at what they heard and what they were seeing. For now, sitting on the edge of the out-of-date, cushioned armchair, Elise Gifford sat, her body rigid and vibrating with newfound energy.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad you read that.
You should have been there.
Yes, I should have been there.
I mean, you could have heard a pin drop, really.
I can understand why that was so captivating that it warranted this writing by yourself. That's incredible. So you don't know if they're still having experiences or visitations?
I can tell you that when they came back, you know, every creak in the house, every, you know, water pipe, everything was something that, that you know, alarmed them.
Sure.
And during one of the evenings, their son, who was in the area 5 years old or so at the time, started crying out in the night. So they rush into the room, and he's spinning like a top.
Wow.
So they grab him, take him into the child into their arms, and comfort him. They're about to leave, and the child says, "Don't leave, Mommy." Why? Because when you leave, the monsters come.
Oh,
the monsters with red eyes.
Wow. Okay. All right. Wow. I got to read this book.
You're going to love it, I swear.
Oh, man. Wow. And of course, there are probably a lot of people listening to this saying, yeah, sounds very elaborate, not on your part, but on their part. But again, I guess if you were there, it becomes quite convincing, and the book brings you there.
Yeah, I really think so. You might say there was something was misunderstood, you know, mm-hmm. that there was some misconception. You might say that it's interpreted differently. But at least for me, and I think, you know, for anybody that reads the book or anybody that would meet these people,
yeah.
They're just incredibly, they're just very credible and very solid. And you would the idea of a hoax wouldn't cross your mind.
Well, okay. You working on anything next?
Actually, I was up at 4 this morning working on the third of the Jack Madsen books, which
go.
Is called Dark Angel.
Yes.
And that'll be out early next year.
Wonderful. Wow, continue doing your stuff, man, because it's fascinating, and it both entertains and educates us at the same time. Now, where can we find out more about the incredible Ron Felder?
Well, I have a website, which is ronfelder.com, so www.ronfelder.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the book is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble online right now, and it'll be in bookstores in about 2 weeks.
Fascinating. I'm waiting for the TV movie, and you know it's coming.
I hope so. The Mojave Incident.
Here you go. Hey, it's a pleasure speaking to you, Ron. By the way, I love your first name. Very, very nice.
But, you know, it's always great to talk to somebody that's open-minded and truly interested like yourself.
I'm telling you, I cannot talk to people that are not open-minded. I mean, I have that problem with politics, too. I mean, you've got to have an open mind. It's what this world and this life is all about. If you shut your mind off, you're missing 99% of it. And
that's an excellent point.
Yeah. Ron, thank you for what you do, and hopefully we'll speak soon again.
Yeah, I hope so.
Great.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ron.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Ron.
Bye-bye. Bye. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's my story, and I'm sticking to that story. So I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace, prosperity. That ain't going to happen.